We're very privileged to be joined by Alex Sandner, who's come into the studio, and he is the former mayor of Bendigo. And of course, we heard from him during the very interesting forum that we held here at the Pulse for Brownville Ward, and he ran in Brownville and did quite reasonably in the result. So, Alec, good morning to you, and thank you very much for being on the program.
Good morning, Mitchell, and good morning to your listeners.
So we've decided to try and get former candidates in just to hear about what it was like during the campaign and to hear your thoughts on what the new council would look like and what it should do. But first of all, I suppose, backtracking a bit, what were your thoughts on the result? I mean, I think you did reasonably well getting a fair slice of that primary vote and coming to within, I think, about the top five or top six.
Yes, I was in the top five. I was very pleased with my result that I got. It was a lot better than what I thought I was going to get, but I would have liked to have been on the council, but the people have spoken, and democracy is what we've got, and Churchill once said it's the worst form of government we've got until we can find something else, but the people have spoken, and we've got three very good candidates in Brownville. Eddie Contell, who's a previous councillor, Susan Mansfield, she's done very well, and Peter Morelli, Murray from also a previous councillor. So I was defeated by some very good people.
They were very good people. I mean, it's tough to run in a field of 18 candidates. That may have been bigger than what you ran in up in Bendigo, is that right?
Yes, it was much larger than Bendigo. And this is where I went wrong with my campaign. I totally misread it, because up in Bendigo we had 11 candidates, and the top candidate, the person who got the most primary votes, didn't get in because the preferences took that candidate out. I was expecting the same thing to happen here in Geelong, reading the newspapers and the letters to the press. But in Brownville, two-thirds of the primary vote was held by the top five candidates. So that meant that there was very few preferences to throw the top three out. In fact, Susan only got in after the 12th spread, and I was there right until the last spread,
yep.
So which is unusual. Usually you get your candidates elected long before getting to the final spread.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I maybe thought things would be a bit closer because these candidates took a fair slice of the primary vote, as you said, on their own, and that meant that candidates started getting excluded, but the preferences didn't really play a huge role. It was mainly only in Bellarine Ward that the result was different from the top three or top two in the primary vote.
Yes, that was the only ward where it was happened. And as I said, I and many others misread it. But as I've said, the results there, we've got a very good council. And tomorrow night they'll elect a mayor in the way in which I believe a mayor should be elected. And we'll move on from there.
I believe up in Bendigo, when you ran, they would have put out the preferences in the ballot packs when people were actually going in to vote, whereas now, of course, there were no preferences that were submitted with the candidates. Do you think that changed it in that preferences maybe were a bit more scattered this time around?
You're quite correct there. It was the election before that the ballot papers went, and I believe that was a very good move, because there was... Up in Bendigo, we'd have quite a number of dummy candidates, and once the ballot paper came out, you could see who was supporting who and who wasn't. And I believe it's been a very good move to take the ballot papers, to take the preferences off the photo and 150 words, so that people can decide on their merits and not according to the way they want their mates to vote.
Do you think you would run again if, there'll be an election in 2020. Do you think you'll run in that election or wait and see?
I'll wait and see on that one, yes.
What would be your sort of main approach if you were to run again? What would you change based on the lessons you've learnt from this campaign?
If I ran again, I would start the campaign earlier and I would door knock. Actually, physically knock on people's doors. We have a candidate or a councillor in Bendigo who's been there for 34 years.
Yeah, I was looking him up just last week, actually.
Yes, and every election, he starts door knocking about 6 months before, and he does physically knock on people's doors and present himself and talk to people, and people like that sort of treatment.
What was your campaigning strategy? Did you do the street stalls? Did you have signs up around the town?
No, my strategy was letterboxing.
Yep.
And that's what I did.
And, yeah, I mean, people like that sort of face-to-face contact, I suppose, the human touch.
Yes, although I didn't get to knock on very many doors. I was more in concentrating on getting as many pamphlets out into letterboxes that I could, and I was running basically my own campaign. I had two or three other people putting pamphlets out. But when you're putting a pamphlet out, I ask myself, why are you putting a pamphlet out? I'm asking people to vote for me. And that's what my pamphlet had. It had my photograph and Vote Alec three times across the top. If anyone picked it up and said, oh, this is a bit of rubbish, they've already seen a photograph, Vote One Alec. That's all I wanted them to see.
Well, that's what people say in local government, that quite important it can be that name and face recognition, and people vote for people they know, because in a field of 18 people, it's hard to know all 18 and then have to rank them from 1 through 18 on the ballot paper.
Correct, yes. Very hard.
So that's your approach, and you might go out and do more door knocking next time. But if we look at the council now, you've had a bit of experience in Bendigo. I remember in the candidates forum you spoke about your experience as trying to bring people from different backgrounds together. And it seems like this new council will have to do the same thing, because as you pointed out, just in Brownville ward alone, you've got three very different people that come from different backgrounds and have different political views. So how do you try and bring people together?
I'm sure that the elected councillors were well on the way to doing that themselves, because meeting the candidates, which I had the pleasure of doing, I was looking them up and down and thinking, hang on, these are the people that have been accused of bullying, and they were very decent people to be with, talk with. There was no animosity, and I thought to myself, you people are going to work well together because you've got that mindset to start with, and that's the big thing.
And did you follow the sacking of the council? Were you in Geelong at that time?
No, I wasn't in Geelong at that time, and nor have I read the report, but I'm aware that it was around bullying. But my approach to life is, you can't alter the past. I'm more interested in the future, because that's what you can influence. I approached it, look, a council has been sacked, they're appointing a brand new council, and I looked at my credentials and I thought, well, hang on, Alec, you're new to the area, you're independent, you've got previous council experience at the highest level recently. I thought, well, those are a few pluses, so I'll give it a go. I recognised that I had a very great disadvantage in not having local knowledge, but I soon put a group of people around me who I was able to get advice from. But I'm sure this council will turn out to be an excellent council.
Do you have any thoughts on the directly elected mayor model that we had and have now scrapped? Obviously, in Bendigo, the mayor was chosen by the councillors, and that's the model that they're going with, and we're going to see the result of that tomorrow night. What was that process like in Bendigo to try and work out who would be mayor? Were there deals done between councillors behind closed doors? How did that happen?
Well, the initial vote was done in private with the councillors. There were no deals done. The chief executive officer went round the table and said, who wants to nominate? Various people nominated, including myself in the final year that I was there. He said, right, each of you got 5 minutes to stand up and tell your other councillors what you're going to do and not do, and then we'll have a vote. And that was the way it went. As far as I'm concerned, it's a democratic process, because The councillors, the 9 or the 11 councillors, they're appointed by a democratic vote. So that's where democracy comes into the appointment to start with. Then they select one of their number to be mayor. I don't agree with this popularly elected mayor, because you're putting somebody into the council arena where they've had no previous experience. And what a lot of people don't understand, the Local Government Act does not give differential powers to a popularly elected mayor as against a mayor elected by the councillors. The two elected mayors that you had here in Geelong that were popularly elected, when they got there, had the same powers as a mayor appointed, a mayor that's going to be appointed tomorrow night will have.
Which is just one vote around the table, isn't it?
Well, it's the vote of...
In the chamber, yeah.
Yes, it is. But it's still democracy, and it's still the same powers. And I've yet to come to terms with why people are so fanatical about this popularly elected mayor, because when they get there, they've got the same, exactly the same powers.
Yeah, I think you're right in one sense, in that they have the same powers, and maybe there's a risk with the popularly elected mayor of someone becoming a bit too presidential, mm-hmm. and some of the impacts that come from that. And, you know, we talk about how politics has become very presidential in Australia. But at the same time, if someone's had something, which is the ability to vote for mayor, maybe they don't like it being taken away from them, which is what's happened.
Yes, you've got to take that into account, and I've got to realise that I'm just expressing my view. There are a lot of people out there that have a contrary view, and I have to respect that view.
So going forward, I mean, you obviously had some priorities for council. What do you think are the priorities that the new council should be focusing on?
Well, if I'd been elected, I would have been looking firstly to have a dedicated planning officer appointed to every planning permit that's submitted. Now, let's just pause here a moment. It's all very well for me to sit here and tell the listeners that's what I'm going to do if I got there. But that's the most dangerous thing that any councillor can say, because in this instance, I would have to get five other people on the council to agree with me so that you'd have a majority vote, so that we could tell the chief executive officer, look, this is what we want. So it's hard to get what you want on council. You've got to get five others to agree with you. But the reason why I'm saying this is that this is not just applicable to Geelong. It's applicable, I've seen it through quite a number of the councils around Victoria. A person lodges a permit, and I'm talking about a person that did this down at Janjuk. They had they're going to build two units. They lodged their plan with a single driveway. No, you can't have a single driveway. All right, okay. So we go back, all the plans are redrawn. They come back later, meet another person, and bear in mind there's fees and everything. And the person looks, yes, you've got a nice plan. Why have you got two driveways? Oh, we were asked to have two driveways. No, that's ridiculous. You've got to have one driveway. Mm-hmm. So the permit came back out again. Now that is less likely to happen if the one person is dealing with the permit.
Yep.
Now, the other thing that I would have been advocating strongly for is I'm aware that there's an organisation, Bisinella Developments, has an $8 million claim against not only the council but some of the council officers. I would be strongly advocating and going as hard as I could to get five people to agree with me that be settled by mediation, because if that goes to court, which it looks like it's going to do in 2019, it's going to cost the ratepayers millions in fees to the solicitors and the direct cost of the time of the officers preparing for it. If I was there, I'd be trying to get mediation, trying to get something like an ex gratia payment, no admission of liability, no discriminations to the officers who have been caught up in it, and that would be the way out of it. Because, you see, the officers who have been challenged in the courts, they've got to defend themselves, and that's not going to be helpful for their careers, whether they're guilty or innocent. It's not something that people should be put through. So I'm not taking some, but you've asked me what I'd be after, and that's a couple of things that I'd be looking for.
It's interesting that you prioritise planning, because it just seems to me that planning pretty much in local government is probably the number one issue that causes people to tear their hair out, and you've given a very salient example there of what people go through on an almost daily basis.
Yes, and the other thing is, like, people wanting a building permit. To me, that's very straightforward, but recently I've been seeing there's 80 days for a building permit, 66, and I'm not saying this is happening at Geelong. It's what I've read of other local government. But you're asking me what I'd like to see, and those are the things that you'd like to see. But what you've got to remember is that councillors have very little power. Councillors appoint the chief executive officer and pass the budget, and they'll pass resolutions on strategy. But when it comes to direction and number of staff and the management structure, that's all in the hands of the chief executive officer. And you could pass resolutions and hopefully that they get implemented.
Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning, Alec. I really appreciate it. It's been interesting to hear your thoughts. But overall, I think it was a very good result for you, and hopefully we'll see you running in elections in the future. Just incidentally, would you ever consider running for another level of government? Like next year, it looks like we might have two elections, federal and state. Would you put your hand up as an independent candidate at some point?
I doubt that. I doubt that very much. As I'm sitting here now, you probably think I'm a lot younger than what I am, and I'm not going to disclose my age.
You're very youthful-looking, I will say.
Yes, well, yes, if I showed you my driver's license and showed you the year in which I was born. Look, I'm happy to say I was born in 1939, and I'm 78, turning on 79. Now, to consider standing for council, I'd be 81. Now, come on, it's time I went out to the paddocks and did a bit of grazing, I think, at that stage in your life.
Well, you could have fooled me about your age, I have to say, but you're only as young as you feel. And yeah. I think if people still have a valuable contribution that they want to bring to the table, then why not? Age shouldn't be any barrier to that.
Exactly. Look, if in three years' time I'm still as fit and active as I am, I'll probably consider it, but I'll wait until then, until making a decision.
Well, all the very best with that. Thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate it, as I said, and hopefully we'll see you in the future.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alexander, there joining us on 94.7 The Pulse. He was a candidate for Brownville, and it was good to hear about his thoughts on the campaign.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.